This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Why does Trump bring hostages home and Joe Biden did not? We'll discuss that tonight. Brianna Morella joins us. We have so much to talk about, from judicial activism to the world going crazy. Are we going to see the end of the war in Ukraine? All that coming up on I'm Right. Okay, let's discuss hostages coming home, which is freaking wonderful. So thrilled to see this happening. But why are Americans coming home? What's going on right now? First of all, before we get into that, let's discuss this. What is the point of becoming a citizen of a nation? Why ever form nations at all, tribes? Why not? Why do we do that? Why don't we all just go live on our own somewhere? Well, the point is that you get protection and prosperity coming together to form a nation that will advocate on your behalf. You see, being a citizen of a country is a contract with obligations on both sides. And this is the difference between the evil communist tyrants in this country and administrations like the one we have now. The obligations go both ways. Yes, you as a citizen, me as a citizen, I have obligations. I've always felt a duty to my country. It's part of the reason I signed up to fight for it to this day. Part of the reason I do this. I want to advocate on behalf of my country. I care about it. I have a duty to it. I would die for it today. But that's not one way. That doesn't only go one direction. My country has an obligation to me as well. And this is not just about America. This should be every citizen of every nation across the globe. I am a citizen of the United States of America. That means when I go abroad, whether I'm in Mozambique, whether I'm in London, Australia, wherever I happen to go, I am offered some layer of protection by the government of the United States of America because I'm a citizen of the United States of America. That is how it should be. Remember that story from the New Testament? We talked about it before. Hopefully you've read it in your Bible. When Apostle Paul is getting beaten, he gets arrested, he's getting beaten, and he says to him, should you be doing this to a Roman citizen? Remember how they freaked out? Whoa, hey, bring the man a glass of water. Whoa, I didn't realize. What is that? That's citizenship right there. I'm a citizen. You mess with me, you will deal with the fury of Rome. But here in the United States of America, that goes away whenever you elect a Democrat, you see. It just does. It goes away. 4 years of Joe Biden's presidency with Americans held all over the planet by terrorist groups, by nation states, and the only time anybody can even remember the Biden administration lifting a finger to bring one home is when a black WNBA lesbian got busted and thrown in prison in Russia. As soon as they thought they could get some cultural Marxist brownie points out of it, the Biden administration bent over backwards and released from prison the foremost weapons dealer on the planet so we could bring the black lesbian back home and get some cultural Marxist brownie points. But after that, it went back to not a care in the world, too bad, so sad, best of luck in prison over there. And then the Trump administration comes in. And we'll get to the ones he just released, but it's not as if he's done. Donald Trump constantly is talking like this.
As far as I'm concerned, if all of the hostages aren't returned by Saturday at 12 o'clock, I think it's an appropriate time, I would say cancel it and all bets are off and let hell break out. I'd say they ought to be returned by 12 o'clock on Saturday, and if they're not returned, all of them, not in drips and drabs, not two and one and three and four and two, Saturday at 12 o'clock. And after that, I would say all hell is going to break out. And I don't think they're going to do it. I think a lot of them are dead. I think a lot of the hostages are dead. I think it's a great human tragedy what's happened, how people can be that.
I want you to know something. I know you like hearing an American president talk like that. I like hearing an American president talk like that. But this is yet another thing that should not be a partisan issue. You, an American citizen, if God forbid you are ever abroad and Russia, Hamas, whoever gets their hands on you, you have every right to expect every single American president to speak about you exactly like that. That should be the base expectation of every single American president. You were the commander in chief. Me, the citizen, I have a duty to the country. I will fulfill that duty. You have a duty to me as well. You look out for me. You protect me. And you let anyone know who would harm a hair on my head, even though I don't have any left, that all hell will come down on them if they do so. That is part of citizenship. And I hate that we don't have it when Democrats are in office. And I love that we have it now. And I loved Mark Fogel, a teacher. The dirty Russians got their hands on him 4 years ago, wrongfully detained in a Russian prison, not exactly a great time. Donald Trump gets in. 3 weeks later, boom, Mark Fogel's on a plane home. Here he was last night.
I feel like the luckiest man on earth right now. And I want you to know that I am not a hero in this at all. And President Trump is a hero. Thank you all. And I love our country. And I'm so happy to be back here. And I wish I could articulate it better.
You've done beautifully. And he's got a great mother. And when I saw the mother at a rally, she said, if you win, will you get my son out? And I promise, she's 95 years old. And I said, we'll get him out, and we got him out.
Isn't that wonderful? And why does Trump get him out? How'd that happen? How did that happen? Well, you know, I'm a father. Stay with me on this. Maybe you're a father, maybe you're a mother. I'm a father. And to be honest with you, I don't think I'm a very good one. If you ask me, I don't think I'm a very good one. But the people around me, my wife included, think I'm a great one. Oh, you're the best dad. And you know what I am? I care. I love them. That's what I am. All my failings, all the ways I've gone wrong. If you just care, that'll get you a very long way as a father. You might even find yourself raising a couple fine young men like I am. Why does Donald Trump, as president, why is he so successful? He did this last time, too, during his 4 years. Why is he so successful bringing Americans home when they are kept abroad? He cares. That's it. He cares. He doesn't get in and check the poll numbers. When someone puts something in front of his desk, hey, Mr. President, we have a Mark Fogel helped over there in Russia. It doesn't immediately become political. Well, we have the midterms coming up. Have we poll tested this? Do we know what the Latinos think about? There's none of that. Just genuine care. And oftentimes, look, you want to be a good president? Maybe that's all it takes, is caring enough. And Steve Witkoff, U.S. Special Envoy, said he's not done.
John, I would say to you that the president's policy on Americans that are held abroad is that we leave nobody behind. It's very, very similar to the military credo. Leave nobody back on the battlefield. And that's how he feels. And I think that you'll see a president who is extraordinarily proactive in seeking all hostages to be released who are being held in.
That's wonderful. And you know what's sad? Is that it's wonderful, because we should always expect every American president, the ones we love, the ones we hate, the ones we vote for, the ones we don't, every single American president should conduct themselves exactly this way when our citizens are held or harmed abroad. So good for us, good for Donald Trump. Thank you, Mr. President, very much. Please keep continuing to bring them home, and please keep caring. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have an amazing show for you right now. Hans Mahnke joins us in just a moment. Before we get to Hans, let's get to the expense reports you have to do. Aren't they the friggin' worst? I have a one-man show. It's just me. Aubrey, my wife does the books, but it's just me. I'm the only one with expenses out there, flight here, hotel there, and it's a nightmare then. When she does expenses, you know what I'm in for? A day of text messaging. What category does this go? It's awful. Well, it used to be. Now we have the Ramp corporate card. The Ramp corporate card does it all for you. Doesn't that sound nice? Does it all for you, categorizes everything. You're not chasing down this receipt. That Ramp does it all for you. Make your life easier. How much time would you spend? How much money would you spend if you didn't have to stress it? So for a limited time, listeners of this show can get $250 when you join Ramp. Just go to ramp.com/Jesse. That's ramp.com/Jesse. Cards issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC. Terms and conditions apply. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Okay, so there's more good news out there, and this may not tug at your heartstrings because it's not near and dear to us, but the Russia-Ukraine war, whatever you think about that whole thing, it's been butchery. And you can't ever trust the casualty numbers, but when you look at the estimates out there, we're talking about our losses from World War II. That's the kind of butchery we've seen. Well, we wake up this morning and find out Trump had a long phone call with Putin, and the end of that war has begun. Negotiations have officially begun. Let's get this whole thing stopped. Stop losing all their blood. Stop losing all our treasure. Joining me now, Hans Mahnke, author of the book Swift Boating America. Hans, no matter what, this is a good thing, and I really question anybody who says it's not.
This is a great thing. The thing that frustrates me about this is that it didn't happen 8 years ago. And of course, Trump's hands were tied with this whole Russia collusion hoax, that whole mess. He wasn't able to unleash his superpower, his negotiating power, his leverage, all the stuff in his toolbox. He wasn't able to do that. And we see that he can now, he did today, and we're already seeing the results.
Hans, help me understand, pretend like I don't know anything about politics in America, and I just showed up yesterday. Why the two totally different approaches, the Biden presidency versus the Trump presidency, when it comes to Ukraine-Russia? Why doesn't everybody want the carnage to end? Why isn't negotiating a peace just kind of the normal way they talk? Why so different?
I think it's multi-causal. So you have a lot of stuff going on with old Cold War style people where their whole mentality is Cold War. Russians are bad no matter what. So you have that. You have the corruption. Remember, you had these CIA bases in Ukraine that no one was told about until recently. That was a big secret. There's a lot of Biden corruption going on in Ukraine. There was a lot of general corruption going on in Ukraine. There was the whole U.S. aid thing going on in Ukraine. So it's a lot of stuff to cover up there that people just don't want anyone to find out about. Then there's these kind of geopolitical thinkers who think that Russia has to be contained and Ukraine is part of Europe and this and that and so on. So you have a lot of different kind of people coming together for different reasons. But unfortunately, they all came together under this sort of globalist umbrella or establishment, at least, you know, you want to, whatever you want to call it. And all of those people coalesced sort of under Biden, and they were all pulling in the wrong direction. And, you know, finally that's being corrected.
Okay, Hans, let's switch gears and talk about something that just makes me, it makes my blood pressure go through the roof. The whole Chinese spy balloon thing. For those who may have forgotten, the United States government under Joe Biden detected a Chinese spy balloon when it was over Alaska. It was then allowed to traverse the entirety of the United States of America, and they waited until it was over the freaking Atlantic before they shot it down. Hans, talk to me about this, please.
Yeah, no, it makes my blood boil just as you. We've now found out from a still classified report within the Pentagon, it's a 75-page report that's been reported about. The report itself has not come out yet, but that report is supposed to state, well, what they found. So after they shot it down in the Atlantic, which makes things much more difficult because then you have to send down divers and, you know, try and recover everything. Eventually they did that. Would have been easier if they just shot it down over land, but okay. So they found the pieces and now they put them back together. And now they figured out, oh my goodness, this thing is full of US parts. So there's parts in there from Iridium, the satellite phone company. There's parts in there from Texas Instruments, various other US companies that were basically US technology was used by China to spy on the US in a nutshell. That's what's what was going on. The other thing that I found very interesting that hasn't really been reported is that they found kind of empty compartments within that spy balloon. And they weren't being used at the time, but they could have been used in an offensive way. So there was no offensive weaponry, anything like that on the balloon. It was just spying equipment, but it could have been. So, you know, otherwise, what are these all these empty compartments for? So they were talking about maybe you could launch drones, gliders, whatever, that sort of thing. And that's what these compartments might have been for. But, you know, as it stands, from what we know now, U.S. technology was used by China to spy on the U.S.
Okay, so walk me through that, Hans, the possibilities there. Does that mean Texas Instruments is collaborating with the Chinese Communist Party? Or does it mean the Chinese are doing what the Chi-Coms have been doing forever, just blatantly ripping off our technology?
Yeah, no, it's the latter. So what you can pick this stuff up on eBay, the simple stuff, the more difficult stuff you have to find other ways of getting. But no, I mean, there's no suggestion at all that any of these U.S. companies were collaborating with the Chinese Communist Party or the Chinese in general. But look at what happened with NVIDIA recently. You know, you had the new Chinese AI and everyone was sort of reporting about it and everyone was saying, oh, look, they did it for so cheap and they did it themselves and so on. And then it turns out once you look under the hood that actually they did it using these NVIDIA chips, but they're not allowed to be sent or sold to China. So what did they do? They went to Singapore and bought, I think, like 50,000 of them or something like that. So it's very easy for them to source, even if there are sanctions, if there are export restrictions and so on, it's very easy for them to go elsewhere and to other markets and find this stuff.
Hans, let's switch gears to something that's your specialty, the Russia hoax. We were talking earlier about Ukraine, the Russia hoax. There are a lot of ties there, are there not?
Oh, massively, very, very much so. I think, first of all, the most important thing that's always kind of overlooked, especially by legacy media, is that the Ukraine war did not start in 2022. It started in 2014 under Obama. It was just on a smaller scale. This was the whole coup situation, which Biden basically greenlighted, Victoria Nuland, that whole story. I mean, I'm digressing here, but that's how it kicked off. They kicked out the democratically elected government of Ukraine. Biden and Nuland replaced them with their own puppets. And the Russians weren't happy with it, obviously not. And that's when they took Crimea. That was back in 2014. And then you had the civil war breakout in the eastern parts of Ukraine, where you have Russian-speaking people who are not happy with this situation, obviously, right? So this has been going on for a very long time. And President Trump could have resolved this during his first term. In fact, during that election in 2016, he kept saying that he was going to resolve it. But then with this Russia collusion hoax, they basically tied his hands. They criminalized any kind of diplomacy with Russia. You remember, I mean, anytime he met the Russian ambassador or something like that, which was completely innocuous, they had a total meltdown, the media did. When Putin gave a Baron Trump, the son, a football, like a soccer ball, the media had a meltdown about that soccer ball being bugged and being spyware, and it was just complete hysteria. It was incredibly bad because it prevented Trump from doing anything about that situation that was going on already. And then, of course, when Biden came in, things only escalated and got worse. Now, some people say that the Russia hoax was at least meant in part, and I agree, to cover up for everything that had gone on in Ukraine. And I think that is true. We already talked about the coup in 2014. Ukraine also interfered in the 2016 election quite openly. You can go back and, you know, they had their ambassador writing anti-Trump pieces. They had their prime minister go on Facebook and just go on a huge, horrible anti-Trump rant. This is all in the run-up to the 2016 election. So there was a lot to cover up. There was a lot to be gained by the establishment, by the elites, by all those kinds of people, by Democrats, in painting Russia as the bad one and Ukraine as the good one. That was sort of the overarching idea.
What a freaking ugly state of affairs. Swift Boating of America, that's his book. Hans, thank you, brother. I appreciate you very much.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Policy's in. Policy Gabbard is officially in. What's that mean? Let's talk to Brianna Morello about that and many other things. Before we talk to her about that, let me talk to you about your cell phone company and why it's communist garbage. We have got to stop funding the companies who hate our guts and work against us. We have got to put our money where our morals are. And I realize that can be difficult sometimes when you're going out to buy this, when you're looking for this service. It's hard to stop, take an extra step, get on your phone. Okay, what causes do they support? It's hard. I realize that. But not with PureTalk. At least with your mobile service, it's a no-brainer. PureTalk's on the same 5G network, so you're not sacrificing service. You save a fortune. They hire Americans. They don't fund things like Planned Parenthood and Black Lives Matter. PureTalk, that's a no-brainer. And now, with the qualifying plan, free phones. I know that phone of yours has cracks in the screen and stuff. How about you go get an iPhone 14, Samsung Galaxy? PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Tulsi Gabbard is in. We officially have the most attractive director of national intelligence in the history of the United States of America. That's good, but I'm sure there are other Bennies involved. Joining me now to discuss that is Brianna Morello, host of the wonderful Brianna Morello Show, which you can see right here on the first on the weekend. Okay, Brianna, besides the fact that she's hot, what should we expect here?
Oh, that's all I had for you. The fact that she's hot, Jesse. I didn't have anything else. Now, this woman is absolutely incredible. First off, I got to say, I love the fact that Tulsi Gabbard was one of the thousands of Americans who were added to the terror watch list, the TSA terror watch list. As you guys know, we spoke about it. I broke an extra exclusive to her. I called her team to let her know that she was added to that list. And so now to see her as the DNI director, I got to say, is really, really impressive. We've been looking for all the facts as to how she landed on that list. And I'm sure now we'll finally figure that out. But I'm really excited. She seems to call out all the right people. She knows that FISA was a massive issue. I know, Jesse, between you and I, we hate FISA. And she seems to understand that she's not rolling back. All the reports do say that she's getting a little cushy with FISA. She's not. She still does not like it at all. She understands that you've been used legally to surveil the American people. So this is the kind of person you'd want in a position like this. So I'm excited, and I hope you are too.
Oh, yeah. No, I all kidding aside, I'm very excited that we have someone who's aware of the corruption, all the evil stuff that goes on inside of our intelligence community, heading up the intelligence community. That brings me to this point, though, Brianna. How concerned are we that they are simply going to silo her? Now, she is a very sharp individual on top of her military service and everything else, but these people live in secrecy. That's, frankly, their job. Are we worried they're going to keep her, you know, hey, just Tulsi, no, stay over there. We've got this covered over here.
Yeah, it sounds like that she's not. She understands that she needs to push back on the intel community. She's very well aware of that. So I think that she's not going to allow them to push her off to the side. She's going to get the work done. I'm confident in that. And, you know, she's ticked off all the right people. And that's usually a clear indicator when everyone that you and I both don't like hate her. That's a clear indicator to me that she's the perfect person for the role and that she's not going to just be quiet and kind of get backed into a corner. So I'm very confident that she's going to correct all the issues that we talk about all the time.
All right. It seems like RFK Jr. is going to get through tomorrow, which I'm actually surprised, but I can't believe Tulsi got through. I can't believe RFK is getting through, but it looks like they're getting through. What do we expect him to actually do? I realize he's become an internet meme at this point in time, but what's actually going to happen?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm hoping he can make America healthy again. It's outrageous that this country has become so unhealthy, and I think he understands all of that. He used to be the left's hero until they realized he was anti-vax and he was pushing back against big pharmaceutical companies. So I think he's going to continue to do that. I think he's going to get through, and I think he's going to continue to push back against all these companies that have destroyed this country and destroyed our health. So I'm hopeful that RFK is going to do just that. We'll see. Did he talk a big game over the last couple of months? We'll find out. But I also really do hope that he stays true to his word, because we've got a big issue on our hands. You know, these pharmaceutical companies are intentionally making Americans sick so that we become forever patients. And the clearest indicator of that is food. Jesse, I talk about it all the time. I lost 30 pounds from no longer eating processed food to going to a carnivore only diet. And so many Americans I know are doing the same, and they're having great results. It's not for everyone, but it just goes to show that the food we're taking in is probably poison and it's killing us.
So carnivore only, where do chips fall in there? I really like chips.
Sorry to break the news to you. You do keto, so you understand.
Yeah, obviously. Very strict about the whole thing. Okay, Kash Patel, God only knows when he's going to get in there, because Dick Durbin keeps stopping him. Why would Dick Durbin be so concerned about Kash Patel?
Oh, Kash Patel's the major threat. Kash Patel understands where all of the people who need to be purged out of the federal government are. And so they're trying their best to play the long game in all of this. The FBI is afraid of Kash Patel because he's got the experience as a prosecutor, and he also understands what needs to be done to purge these awful communists from the FBI. Democrats, for example, have done a great job. Here in our Florida offices, our field offices, they've put Trump haters at the very top of these field offices. And then they've infiltrated other parts of the department. So they know that they're on limited time at this point. So getting rid of Kash Patel is what they're hopeful for, but they don't have anything. Kash Patel's going to get confirmed. There's not a single negative thing that you could say about this guy besides the fact that he wrote a book about going after the deep state, and that's all they seem to have. Otherwise, they're just sitting here spewing lies on this man. So I think he's gonna get in. It's just a matter of when they finally let him to get in.
Okay, he gets in. Pam Bondi's already in. Do government people go to prison? I realize we have a bunch of resignations and firing and things like that, but that's not enough. That's not near enough to save the country. If we have 4 years of resignations where we haven't saved anything and we're finished, are they going to send people to prison? I'm talking about government people, not January 6th meemaws.
Jesse, I agree with you. You know, you put out a great tweet the other day about all of this. They need to go to prison. Pam Bondi, this is the ultimate test for Pam Bondi. I know a lot of people seem to be very confident in her. I was very lukewarm about her because I know in Florida she did support red flag laws. And when it came to other critical cases, the Zimmerman case, she wasn't very conservative, we'll say. So I was never really confident in her. Now, I don't have much in the negative to say about her, but I wasn't very confident. So we'll see. I mean, the fact that we're just firing people at the FBI who might have leaked about the ICE raids that were happening around the country, might have leaked that, it shouldn't be just firings. These people need to go to prison. I mean, God forbid if one of these ICE agents would have been shot in the process of all of this or attacked because you let these gangs know that they were coming for them. I mean, people could have died from this. This is a very serious issue. So we'll see if she's willing to file charges against these people, but we need them to be dragged off to prison. These are evil human beings. They don't believe the same things you and I believe in. They're communists. They're nasty human beings. And they belong behind prison bars. Whoever becomes the next president of the United States, let's say it's not a Republican, if it's a Democrat, we're just then going to go back to the old way of doing things. So we need to create fear in any elected official, anyone who works in government, that this will be you if you decide to betray the American people.
Tell me about New York Democrats, Brianna.
They're all criminals. All of them are criminals, Jesse. I've been covering them for years now. As you know, I'm a New Yorker, a recovering New Yorker. And I sat here and watched the corruption unravel. And there was little outrage because they have the media on their side. But there's been plenty of pay-to-play schemes throughout the years. And we all know that they are gunning for President Trump and anyone in his administration. So I'm suggesting that Pam Bondi launch an investigation into these people and start going through their books. You know, it was back in, I believe it was 2018, when New York Democrats took in $1 million donation from the Hospital Association. And then just days later, Andrew Cuomo, signed off on expanding the funding for Medicaid, which meant that there was an extra $140 million in payouts that were given to anyone who was filing these Medicaid claims. So the hospitals, nursing homes, potentially. So that's a crazy investment, right? You donate $1 million to the New York Democrats, and in return, you get $140 million in additional funding. And that's at the expense of taxpayers. Now, just there, Kathy Hochul's also been accused of several pay-to-play schemes involving her husband and other people as well. And it also was with Andrew Cuomo when he was a governor as well. I mean, I could count off the top of my hand at least 5 instances in pay-to-play schemes between those two alone. Now, if you want to go after people like Letitia James, let's say Alvin Bragg, they were probably in on a lot of these discussions. And so I would say, let's try to get people to flip. The person who I'd probably gun for first is Andrew Cuomo, because we know he's weak. We know he's angry at Democrats for abandoning him and throwing him under the bus. So let's launch those investigations. It's only a couple of years old, so the statute's not up on those. I mean, the most recent one, I believe, happened in 2019 with Andrew Cuomo. So let's start investigating. Let's go after these criminals.
Yeah, no doubt. Brianna, talk soon. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Jesse.
Now, let's talk about getting a great night's sleep, shall we? I love sleep. Dream powder from Beam makes sure I sleep every single night. It's a cup of hot chocolate, see? It tastes delicious, but it's got things in it. Natural things, melatonin, it's completely drug-free. I sip on a cup of hot chocolate any night I need to sleep, and I sleep well, but the more important thing is I wake up well, meaning I wake up feeling good. Normally, when you take things to sleep, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You wake up and feel like garbage, no more. Go to shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. Get you up to 40% off. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
All right, you're mad about the judges. I'm mad about the judges. Every day you wake up, you roll over, you grab your phone. I know what you do when you wake up in the morning. You roll over, you grab your phone, and you're looking, oh, the judge just stopped another thing you love, and you're frustrated. But how did we get here? What are these judges doing? Who are these people? Joining me now, my friend, CEO, co-founder of the wonderful Federalist, Sean Davis. Okay, Sean, these judges, every day we wake up, we're losing our mind, they're ruining everything. How do they even get to these positions? How do they get this much power? What's going on?
Yeah, it's a great question because they don't actually have the power that they're claiming for themselves. So if you look at how our judiciary is put together, at the bottom you've got federal trial judges, we call them district judges, and they're given authority over a small geographical region. You'll have one maybe in East Texas, you'll maybe have one in West Texas, there's one in upstate New York. They don't have national power because what our founders did when they created the judiciary is they created the Supreme Court and they said, hey, Congress, you can create inferior courts below that to help the Supreme Court out, because obviously they're not going to be able to handle every case around a nation as big as the United States. And so they created these little district courts and gave them pretty circumscribed power in that area. And what has actually happened in say the last 15 to 20 years is these inferior federal judges in federal districts have decided, you know, we have the power to block anyone and everyone from doing anything we want or don't want around the entire nation. And it's completely lawless. It's contrary to the Constitution. It's contrary to the way our laws are written and the way the judiciary was created. And we're getting pretty close to the point where the rubber's going to meet the road and this nonsense is just going to have to stop.
Okay. That's actually what I wanted to talk to you about next. How do we make it stop, Sean? What's the appropriate way to do this? Understanding that we have communist activist judges that are not going to tire of this. They're never going to slow down. Do you pull the Andrew Jackson and tell them, hey, try to enforce it and just ignore it? Do you run to the Supreme Court and say, Clarence Thomas, save us once again? Well, what do you do? How do we stop this? Because it has to stop.
Right. I actually think you do a little of all of that. It's an all of the above strategy. So federal district courts, they have limited power within a limited geographical area related to a limited class of people. So this idea of doing nationwide injunctions against all parties in all states and apply it to all federal agencies, that's nonsense. So what you could have is the Trump DOJ go and say, okay, we are going to respect this order within the bounds of your district related to these particular parties in the case, not parties around the country. And beyond that, you don't have the authority to enjoin us from any of the stuff. So we're going to continue to do that. Meanwhile, I think you do appeals to the higher circuits. You do appeals to the courts, because I know Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, just for two, have written in some of their dissents and some of their concurrences that the nationwide injunctions have to stop. And so there's already an appetite at the Supreme Court for that. So I think you do a little bit of the Andrew Jackson at the district trial court level, knowing that it is a long-term strategy. You're going to have to get the Supreme Court involved. And it's very much in the interest of John Roberts to nip this in the bud, because what you will have happen over time is as courts grab power that they don't have, you're just going to have executive agencies in the presidency ignore them entirely and not do this little carve out I've suggested. They're just going to start ignoring them entirely, at which point the whole perceived legitimacy idol that John Roberts worships in front of, that's gone. And once that's gone, it's never coming back.
Sean, I know I'm asking some questions here that no one knows, including you, so you don't have a crystal ball, but what's the timeline on that look like? How do we get this in front of the Supreme Court? And I know I sound just like a desperate citizen, but that's exactly what I am. I want this to stop like 5 minutes from now. I realize the law moves slower than that, but can the Supreme Court, I don't know how this works, I'm not one of these DC lawyer types, can the Supreme Court wake up tomorrow morning and say, okay, everybody gather around, we're making a ruling here. How's this work?
It probably wouldn't be tomorrow morning, but there are avenues to get claims before them fairly quickly. Like, this isn't just a random dispute between two people who are mad at each other and don't like how they were doing business with each other. You know, that stuff can take years and years and years. We're dealing with the president and the presidency itself being impeded. So these are like major constitutional questions that can really only be settled by the court. So I think realistically, if they decide to move, we could be looking at months, moderately, probably a year or two. And I think that I know. And that's why it's important for Trump's DOJ and the Trump executive to not just go along with it and say, OK, well, you know, you're the court. I guess we got to, you know, wait and see until the Supreme Court gets involved. There has to be some strategic ignoring of the nonsense, because otherwise you're going to let the courts run the presidency for the next 4 years. And that can't be allowed to happen.
No, can't be allowed to happen. All right, we're going to shift gears and talk about Ronald Rowe, Secret Service, acting director of Secret Service, Ronald Rowe. He's going to walk away, collect that government paycheck and walk away. What should we know about Mr. Rowe?
I want to know why he's not under criminal investigation. I mean, we saw what happened with the president and Butler. He was deliberately left completely insecure. You had a gigantic soup sandwich of incompetence running the Secret Service at the time. You had the lead counter sniper not even going to visit the entire building, that building that the would-be assassin fired at Trump from. The guy running counter sniper ops for the Secret Service didn't even bother to set foot on it or go over there and see the point of view over there. And then to top it all off, you had Ronald Rowe going before Congress repeatedly and having these like completely emotional, screaming, shouting meltdowns at members of Congress who had the audacity to question how exactly this agency under his charge was such a disaster. So I'd like to know what exactly that guy was doing the whole time as director. I don't think he deserves a pension. I don't think he deserves to retire. I believe he deserves to be under the criminal microscope for a very long time, because that moron and his incompetence nearly changed the course of world history forever. It very well could have embroiled us in a civil war or worse, because he just chose, you know what, I don't like Trump, so I guess we're just going to not protect him.
Sean, you say incompetence, and I'm not arguing with you at all, but if I'm the type of person who believes this federal government is evil and criminal, and I look at things like you just pointed out, the top counter sniper doesn't go visit the rooftop that's 148 meters in an elevated position away from the subject I'm supposed to protect. At some level, Sean, incompetence doesn't even explain it. I honestly, if you were to ask me, hook me up to a lie detector test, I think people inside the government wanted Donald Trump dead and they tried to facilitate it. That's what I believe.
Oh, I don't disagree with you at all. It's the frame that I use, I call it strategic incompetence. So you had a bunch of morons at basically the line level doing the actual work. The guy who's a lead counter sniper, I think he'd been in the job for 6 years, had no prior military experience, which, you know, I don't either, but I'm also not leading a counter sniper unit. And I think generally, if you're going to be leading counter sniper operations, maybe you should have been a sniper at some point in your career, doing that for a living in hostile combat zones. So I think the people at the actual work level were incompetent. I believe the people above them making decisions were malevolent and malicious. And it's why the Trump detail was denied for years their request for more security. It's why from DHS on down, from Mayorkas on down, they said, no, you don't need any more resources. We're going to give all those resources to the first lady, you know, 50 miles away, not the guy who was a former president is going to be the next president. So I think you had malevolence and maliciousness at the top, deliberately starving him of resources. And then I think they knew they had a bunch of morons below them incapable of doing the job, and they were just happy to let that run its course.
All right, let's shift gears on the JFK files, to the JFK files. Sean, speaking of this exact subject we're talking about, I'm a cynic, as you know me. I don't think there's going to be anything really juicy in there, because look, if powerful people decided to murder the president of the United States of America, the truth of all that probably died when Jack Ruby, a lifelong Jewish mob enforcer, murdered Lee Harvey Oswald. But I don't know. Was it the American Mafia? Was it Meyer Lansky? Was it Trafficante? Was it CIA? Lyndon Johnson? I don't know. But I'm not anticipating a bombshell. Are you?
No, I mean, it's been 62 years, you know, a little over 61 out from that happening. I don't imagine that they did what they did, but then left meticulous files sitting around to be viewed later. So I don't think we're going to find out that much. I hope I'm wrong. I also don't trust the people who've been hiding this stuff for 60 years to just go out because the president said so and find all the documents and hand them out to us. They may just be throwing all those needles in haystacks everywhere. But I will say my favorite conspiracy theory of all time, hands down, is the idea that Lee Harvey Oswald killed JFK. I think it's hilarious.
I actually don't disagree with that at all. I think if whatever theory you believe, if you believe that with everything surrounding it, man, you have some blind faith that is amazing. Sean, thank you, my brother. I appreciate you as always.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
I have some exciting news. Did you know Anti-Communist Manifesto is available on paperback now? Did you know that? Paperback, baby. Of course, it was a hardcover. And of course, it was a national bestseller. Not that I'm going to brag. But now, get the paperback version. Take it on that plane with you. Take it to the John. Go learn about communism, the history of it. Laugh a little bit. What you can do about it. JesseKellyBook.com. We'll be back.
Hey there. I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And I love making fun of CNN. Don't you? Don't you have a good time making fun of CNN? And Anderson Cooper is one of those types I've always enjoyed mocking, because when I think about Anderson Cooper, I think about how he tries to present himself always as this serious journalist. And one moment he'll be this serious journalist, Anderson Cooper, and then in the next moment he'll get caught with these behind-the-scenes footage of him standing in a super deep puddle to make it look like the floodwaters are over his knees. It's a fraud. And in the end, he's just kind of a catty communist is all he is. And he kind of lost it on Chris Sununu last night.
Where's the
again,
proof?
You're waiting. You're not going to be satisfied till he shows up with 10,000 pages.
No, but he's talking about 10,000 pages. He's giving very specific things.
Yes, he's giving.
But he's not actually giving any evidence of that.
It's all going to come, because what they also said was, if we have to go to Congress, we'll go to Congress.
Right, but
we'll show where it is.
Some of the details that have come out, like the $59 million spent on luxury hotels, it's actually not.
You're talking about the FEMA money that was abused for migrants? FEMA money for migrants? That's okay now?
No, I'm not saying it's okay. I'm not saying it's okay. Don't put words in my mouth.
So would you stop that? Would you stop that process?
Don't be a The portray... what I'm saying is the...
Every now and then, the mask slips. See you tomorrow.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.